Welcome to another edition of the Let's Go Rick and Roll podcast with Josh Tolley. I'm Beth the Duran. Thanks as always for listening, subscribing, watching, and interacting with us. We'll get to Josh and Ricky in a bit. Just right now, a couple of things of housekeeping. On YouTube, if you're looking for it, it's under my name, Beth the Duran, because this is my page. And I just don't want to transfer everything else. I'm just trying to make it easier for myself. On iTunes and Spotify, just type in Let's Go Ricky Rowe or Ricky Romero or Josh Tolley. I did that this morning. The names pop up. It has its own page there. On Instagram, it's Let's Go Ricky Rowe. Send the DMs. We do appreciate everything. I read them and then I send them to the guys in the group chat. We appreciate you. Last week's episode, we were talking about mascots in Mexico. Really got people fired up. I think we might have to do a part two with that and introduce Tolley to some more of the mascots that they have in Mexico. But before we get to today's show, it was supposed to be about opening day stories, how is everything going on, the wonderful days of seeing my uniform hanging up. But no, we got more important stuff. We were talking right before the show started, and it turns out that Tolley is going down to Scranton, Pennsylvania this morning, and it got going about ghosts in hotel rooms, and all of a sudden I'm Googling, and you guys are scared, and there's hotel rooms that are haunted in the major leagues. Tolley, how you doing? Ricky, how are you doing? And what the hell? This is for reals?
Yeah, this is for real. Guys, I'm scared to death. I'm in a studio by myself, and we just got done talking about ghosts. I'm waiting for my door to open. If my door opens, I'm out of here. I promise you that.
Oh, my God.
It's funny, though. It's funny. We're talking off air, and it's like all these memories just start coming back of the minor leagues. And You would think that the stories end at some point, but it's almost like you start thinking, you're like, oh, remember when we stayed here and such was scared of the ghosts? And it's real stuff. Like these guys, the reason it came up was because Josh was saying that he's going to Scranton, Pennsylvania this afternoon for his son's game. And I was like, hey, are you staying at the Radisson Lackawanna or Lackawanna?
The Renaissance.
No. In Scranton is the Radisson.
Yes, right.
And I was like, hey, and he's like, you couldn't pay me to stay.
Nope. Hey, you know what's funny, guys? We say that the stories end, but you know, I find it ironic that the last, 3 weeks, all of our stories are minor league stories. And it's interesting because these type of things don't happen in the big leagues. They all happen in the minor leagues, whether it be bus trips, hotel rooms, whatever that comes in between, just stuff you see on the field. You only capture this in the minor leagues, and it's like they're endless. They go on forever. We could do this 24 straight hours and never run out of breath.
Well, we're going to do this every single week live on YouTube Tuesdays at 10 or 1 o'clock Eastern or wherever you may be. We have a couple of people listening in the UK. And before we get into the baseball and all that other stuff, you mentioned these ghosts. And I've heard it in the NBA world in Oklahoma City. There's a haunted hotel when the Lakers go play the Thunder there that nobody wants to stay at. So you guys were talking about this hotel in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I Google it. It's the first thing that pops up. There's like five different stories. Philadelphia Magazine wrote about it. Vin Scully told this story on during a broadcast that it went viral, and that Wade Davis and David Price, and that they were so scared that they stayed out of their room, and they left the hotel room at 7 in the morning just to walk out because they were so scared in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And I'm thinking, okay, this is cool, whatever, but you guys actually saw it firsthand, Tolley?
Yeah, Andy LaRoche. I will never forget it. We both had corner rooms, and it was like 2 in the morning, and he calls me, and he says, I'm in the hallway. Can I come into your room? I open my door, and he's sitting there in his underwear. I said, what happened? And it was something like the faucet kept turning on, and then the TV kept going in and out, and he felt like there was somebody in his room, and he couldn't sleep the rest of the night in his own hotel room.
You know what's funny though, Josh? Every time I felt like we got to that hotel, it was like 2 in the morning. Even like the people at the front desk in the middle of the night were like it almost seemed like they weren't real. Like they were ghosts, like just helping you get your keys, and then everything just seemed so creepy about it. And then I remember I used to get my own room and on every road trip when I got sent down, and you just get used to that in the big leagues. You're like, you don't share a room. In the minor leagues, you're sharing a room with somebody. And for those trips, I'd always ask somebody if they wanted to share a room. I remember once I did get my own room. I like literally slept with the covers over my head the whole night. Like I didn't want to move. I was like, just please, like, just don't scare the shit out of me when I'm sleeping. That's all I wanted.
Hey, you know what? Ricky Bonas, he's the bullpen coach for the Mets. We were another haunted hotel story, but I guess he would have been my pitching coach 1 year in AAA. Would that have been 2010? He might have been my pitching coach is where it happened. And we were going there, and he says that he talks to the ghost when he walks in. Hey, guys, I'm just here for a couple nights working. I won't bother you. Don't bother me. We're good. And then he never has a problem. Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. So I started doing it, and then I still got so scared. Ricky, I feel you, because I would just go across the street to the hotel next door. I would not. My last two trips in, I would not sleep there.
Well, that's
go ahead, Rick.
Nothing ever happened with me personally, but I would hear the stories, and these guys were like dead serious. Like, they weren't like messing around. It wasn't like, it's like, dude, like my faucet kept turning on, my toilet flushed, my TV kept turning on and off, and you're just like, what? And that you mentioned, Beto, it used to be a morgue for war veterans back in the day. That like there's supposedly, if you keep going down in the elevator, you run into that like down. Like
the basement.
Hell no, I never went. There's some guys that went down there, but I never. Hell no, not in a million years.
So everybody has the same stories. I didn't even tell you guys about this article I'm reading right now. David Price says that he and Wade Davis were in the lobby by 7 a.m. checking out because we went to the Ramada just like you guys.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, Tolly? They say we heard weird noises, people knocking on the door. We open it, they're not there. We turned the air conditioner on, and it would go hot. We turned it cold, it got hot. We turned it hot, it got cold. We kept hearing screaming. We checked out of the room. We left as soon as we could. You could not sleep. I put my blankets over my head. I could not sleep. We just left. They looked at us at 7:30 in the morning. Well, what are you guys doing down here? What baseball player wakes up before noon?
It's true. It's true.
Hey, I just had goosebumps of you telling that story.
Oh man,
Ricky! I mean, I know exactly what it is. When you walk in, it's like everything is eerie. You're like, "Oh my God, who's going to jump out at me? Who's going to yell? Who's going to my door?" I remember somebody's door; the keys not working to get into their room. All their stuff was in there. They couldn't get into their room. The latch was locked.
you hear about that one. You hear about the one in Tampa too, the Renaissance we used to stay at. I never experienced anything there, but apparently there's a lady that I think walks the hallways there at night. I heard stories about guys mentioning that their room would like rattle at night. I only stayed at the Pfister in Milwaukee once. You probably stayed there more than I did, Josh, but that place, they say that one's haunted too. So it's just like all these stories about those hotels, those cities that you're just like, man, just leave me alone. I don't want to be scared. I'm just here to play baseball.
Right. How about the Pfister? This is a story, and I wish my dad was on right now to tell the story. So we did a beer tour of the Pfister
Hotel.
The
Pfister. Where?
Yeah, it's
what city?
Milwaukee.
Okay. All
right. So my dad and I do we go to the Miller beer tour or whatever on an off day that we had in Milwaukee. And we had got done around like, I think, five or six. And we went back to the hotel. He had his own room. I had my own room. And he ends up, we were supposed to meet for dinner. We both ended up taking a nap. We woke up at 7. He calls me and says, holy crap. Same thing. My water turned on. As he went to go turn his water off, the closet door opened and the TV changed channels.
No.
My dad says, I think I'm getting out of this hotel. This isn't, I said, oh, you got a good rate though. So who's, well, what's the problem?
It's a big league hotel, Pops. Come on.
I mean, what are you complaining about?
Okay. Welcome to the Let's Go Ricky Roll Ghost Edition podcast. Totally. I asked you the name of the hotel. You said Pfister. And I start typing it in. As I'm not even done typing it in on Google, it pops up Haunted Hotel. Like, not even Milwaukee or anything like that. The famed Pfister is one of the most haunted hotels in the country, arguably the world. Why do you guys stay there? What aren't there other hotels?
No, not in Milwaukee, I don't think. No big league hotels in Milwaukee like that.
Oh, okay, I need to get off the subject right now. I just got a little goosebumps. I'm reading the story. Adrian Beltre playing for the Dodgers, walked into his room, television switching on and off by itself.
Yep.
Okay. I think the one in Tampa is the Vinoy Renaissance Hotel, the Vinoy. And I think I want to say somebody said they might have done an episode of what's that show, the ghost one, where they go hunt?
Ghost Hunters. Ghost Hunters, yeah.
Ghost Hunters or Paranormal State.
I think.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know the Vinoy was haunted. I never had any issues there.
Just type in Vinoy Haunted Hotel in Tampa.
Yeah, no, I definitely believe you.
Yeah.
I had Mike Shaw always hooked me up with the best hotel room there.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful hotel. It's a beautiful hotel.
This is what you get on the podcast right here. You want to hear
during this is it. During World War II, it was temporarily utilized by the US Army for training school. After the war, the hotel was sold to a new owner. So I'm sure it was used for some type of war, probably. Yeah, criminals inside the walls daily, and even described it as a creepy building. So
yeah,
see, there you go. This creepy.
See, I'm not a guy who like believes in all that crazy stuff or all that paranormal activity. I'm like, man, whatever. But hearing enough stories, I know not to mess with it, and I'm gonna do what Ricky Bonas did. What's up, guys? Here for a couple days. We good?
Yeah.
All right, bro. Good to see you. Good talking.
You do a lot of boxing fights, Beto. What would you do if they said, dude, hey, if a friend of yours said, hey, the, you know, whatever casino one, it, this route, this, it's haunted here. What would you do?
I'm gone. And remember, I've been in some really weird cities and really suspect hotels at times. Like, you go to nice cities, but you, like, boxing promoters are cheap as hell. So they're not going to pay for it. Like, Oscar takes care of us. But when you work for the smaller ones, I mean, sometimes you're staying at a Dare You Win. And you just make sure you're no, I'm going to do what Tolly does. I'm going to go across the street to the other hotel. Because also, Rick, come on, we're Mexican. We grew up with La Llorona and everybody telling you, like, all these stories about they're going to come kidnap you. I don't want to deal anything with that. But people think it's easy being in the major leagues. You know, it's a five-star hotel, but there's five-star problems there, too. All right.
That's right.
Oh, man. I can't believe we just spent 13 minutes talking about scary hotels. And you know who would tell you this? Michael Thompson, former Laker. In Oklahoma City, he is freaked out of that hotel. I guess the lady that walks the hallways was the mistress of the hotel owner, and she was killed there. The legend goes, and like she makes all kinds of noise, and he's like, and he does the same thing. He's like, just leave me alone, lady. Just leave me alone. All right.
Yeah, that's like, nah, no thanks.
Hey, Beto, I'm gonna get a picture tonight. I'm gonna get down there a little bit early. I'll take a picture of the hotel. Nice photo.
Nope.
Yep. And then let's share it on the Instagram.
Okay. What are you gonna do? You gonna stand in front of the hotel?
Yeah, I'll have my son take it.
Are you going to go inside?
I'll go in. I might get maybe an Instagram live feed from inside.
You won't go down to the basement?
I won't. No, you're right. I won't. I might not ever walk in that house, that hotel again.
Totally. What if your son says, Dad, I'm not scared. There's no such thing as ghosts. Let's go.
Then I have to go.
Oh, we got to get a hold of your kid. We got to get a hold of your kid. We got to make it deal.
I mean, I just had – my spine just tingled.
It does. They're coming to get you. Darren, what's up? You're watching from Panama right now. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Darren, send me a message, and we'll get you a sticker down to Panama. All right. Now, before we get Panama. Going into – yeah, I told you, we're going international. Now, before we go into baseball talk and opening day and what happened with everything else, let's get the update on Farmer Tolly. Tolly, how is the 300 acres that you got going on?
Well, I'm going to tell you the schoolhouse that we've been working on. We had the code guy show up yesterday, and now we have to change some things around, but it's okay. Some minor adjustments. The code guys always ruin everything for us. But it's good. We're painting the windows. My father-in-law is painting the windows actually as we speak.
Look at that.
Wow. Yeah, it's freaking awesome. So, yeah, the windows are getting painted. I picked up all the ash flooring for it. So that's 2 weeks to acclimate inside the building. And once we lay that, we're good to go painting the next 2 weeks. But I'm going to tell you what I did, what I really did. I've been golf ball hunting at the golf course.
What?
By my house. 500 golf balls the other day. Me and my two kids.
Whoa. How many pro ones?
So they go through the ball washer. We have a ball washer and they go through them and then we'll start sorting them because we went yesterday again and got another we probably have 500 or so in total. We got about 100 yesterday. So 400 the first day, 500.
That's about five rounds for Beto for him to lose those balls right there.
Yep. Uh-huh. If there's water.
So. That's what's been going on the hill, guys.
No. We got more because Farmer Tolley had service last week, and he was in the farmhouse. Something about a chimney. You sent me and Ricky a message. Said you were in a chimney. Oh. What is this?
Yeah, we had a 20-foot chimney suspended about 10 feet in the air, and we had to take it down one brick at a time.
Oh my God. Dude, those bricks look heavy though.
They're
50 pounds a piece.
Wow.
Look at that.
Jeez.
Wait. Man, this is fantastic.
I can't wait to see the finished product on this.
It's freaking awesome.
This is Ricky, would you ever do anything like that? Nope.
Absolutely not. There's a reason I live in the city.
Tony, you have a farmhouse, right? Or a schoolhouse. Is that where you're going to educate your kids? They're going to go in there?
Nope. My kids are going to go right back to school starting next year.
So why are you building a schoolhouse?
My wife, Catherine, her Pilates, she's going to do Pilates classes out of there.
Oh, okay.
And then we're going to use it's going to be more like for group classes, but we're also, my in-laws they'll do an art show in there and then we can do whatever we want with it. Bring a band in, throw a razor after the COVID.
We'll sit there and drink whiskey all night.
Yeah, if there's any left.
Oh man, we took care of them. The delivery did show up. Slow Brew hooked them up. Rotterhammer's bourbon. I got that. Some whiskey showed up to Tolley and he also got some micheladas. Tio Rodrigo micheladas. And Tolley, I should have asked this. Do you even know what a michelada is?
No, I asked Ricky. You were away before the show. And Ricky and I said, hey, what is this? I said, man, that thing was spicy.
And they are spicy. Some of those are spicy. I think the first one he gave me too, I was like, damn, this is spicy. Not all of them are spicy. But I told him, it's a Mexican version of a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, with beer. All right. So
with beer.
I should have asked that totally. I should have just sent you some regular beers. Like, it's all right. Like, did you have any clue what a michelada was before you got that delivery?
No. I opened the box and I opened the can and took a sip of it right away. And I thought it was a craft beer. I swear to God. I was expecting it to have like a beer flavor. And I went, ooh, and it hit my lips. The first taste, the original taste didn't like hit me. And then I got some cayenne pepper or something, and my goodness, my nose started running.
Yeah, they were supposed to send you the Hefeweizen, the regular Cali Squeeze Hefeweizen, like the nice, like kind of Blue Moonish. But
yep.
I guess they did it. And thanks to Tio Rodrigo hooking us up right now. So Tio Rodrigo craft beer. All that other good stuff. That's our sponsor. We'll take care of you. Tolley's set up, ready to go. All right, Rick.
Freaking off.
All right, here we go. Now, last week, our good friend Ricardo Romero made his local TV debut here in Southern California. He was on KTLA Channel 5 at 11:30 p.m. Everybody was asleep. But we stayed up. We saw Ricky. Ricky, normally you go to sleep at what, 9?
Yeah, dude, 9, 9:30. They want. I was there at 8 o'clock for a 11:30 show. I almost felt like I was the starting pitcher that night or something. Be here 3 hours before game time, get prepped. But you know what? I think the cool thing about that is that you don't realize the preparation that goes into it behind closed doors with those guys. And the guy I was on, Darren, from Channel 5, he was awesome to work with. He pretty much said, hey, here you go. This is what we're going to ask you. They made it so easy on me, the whole crew there. But I didn't realize how much work goes into that, Beto, where you know, coming up with your own script, reading off the screen and stuff like that. I was like, wow, this is just – it just happened so fast. And everyone kept saying, it's going to happen fast. It's going to happen fast. And I'm like, half hour goes by fast? Really? And it really does. And a few times having a producer in my ear saying, okay, let's take it to commercial. And I'm like, you know, wrapping up my thoughts. So I never really got caught up by it. I think I was well prepared, one, by you, Beto. Obviously, you're like, hey, don't panic. Just finish it really quick. But it was exciting, man. It was cool. Anytime you get to talk baseball and obviously we're talking about the Dodgers, the Angels and the Padres. And then they obviously played some highlights of my opening day started in 2011. That was cool. So, in all, it was an awesome experience.
Yeah, it was really cool. And totally, I know you didn't see it because you're on the East Coast and it's local TV here. And not because you're my friend, Ricky, and not because we've been doing it for a while, but I was getting text messages from people telling me, wow, Ricky's really improved his on-camera presence. Because when we started doing the podcast, it's one thing to talk, you know, those totally just the regular talk. But it's another thing when you actually have a camera in front of you like you do right now. So when we started doing the video stuff last year, it was kind of weird kind of thing. And I've been doing TV a while, so Ricky took some adjustment. And I'm watching you. I felt like a scout who sees his 18-year-old kid get to the big leagues. Because I was like there watching. I'm like, damn, Ricky, right there, he's taking that turn. Oh, he's saying this, he's doing that, he's looking at this, he's doing that. I'm like, man, I'm so proud of you, Rick, because you had the presence. And even when you did flub a little bit, only I knew. Yeah. Darren knew, you knew, but the audience didn't know. And you, instead of going, you just kept on flowing. I'm like, yeah, that's what's up right there, man. You did good. Yeah. You did really good.
Just because you see some of the best on TV do it, and they have a little... sometimes where they struggle getting out what they're thinking too. And you're like, and they just recover quick. And I feel like it happens to everyone. Just like a mistake can happen on the mound, but you have to make the adjustment quick right there on the fly. Yeah. It's almost the same thing. And obviously you and I have been preparing for a while now and making sure I stay off of certain words and all that good stuff. So I feel like all that helped and it just helped me relax. And like I said, when I think the best part, Beto, is when you put it like, hey, Rick, pretend we're all watching the game with you in the living room, and that's who you're talking to. And you know how you tell us, oh, man, that pitch was nasty? Say that on TV. And that's kind of where I took it, you know. That's just where I went with it. I was like, I'm going to be myself. I'm not going to try and use catchy words and try to get cute, because when I get cute, everything kind of just doesn't go the way I wanted
to. Next thing you know, you're giving up a three-run bomb to the pitcher, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Beto, I did watch. I caught. I was able to find it.
Oh, okay.
The next morning, and cool. I thought he freaking. I thought the same thing. I thought he nailed it. I don't know a whole lot about like camera presence and what you're supposed to do at on a TV set, I guess per se. But dude, it just fired me up. I was so pumped. I wish I could have stayed awake, but I couldn't.
My mom was mad because she says I didn't look at the camera enough,
and you're
I was
not like, supposed mom, to.
Me now too.
Wait, they told you not to look, right?
Yeah. He's like, you're having a conversation with Darren. Yeah. You're having a conversation with him. But my mom's like, you didn't even turn around and look at the camera at all. And I'm like, okay, mom.
But you wait. You shouted your mom out. You said she was there with you.
I did. Yeah. So I guess my dad was I went home this Sunday for Easter, and I guess my mom's like, yeah, your dad said he was butthurt because he said he was there. And I was like, no, he wasn't. He thought I was talking about my debut, the highlights they put up, and it was about opening day. So I had to set something straight at home and kind of set him straight and be like, dude, you weren't there. It was the opening day start. It wasn't – he was like all like sentido and like – I was like, dad, you'll be all right, dude.
Oh, man. People get – I tell you, when they watch TV, like, Ricky, you pitch in front of 50,000, whatever. You didn't say my dad was there with me for this one game. They remember that now. It's
Oh man, I used to hear it all the time, especially when you come to Anaheim and you're shy. And Josh will know this. Sometimes when you're in the dugout and people are screaming at you, you really don't hear it. You really don't hear it ever. You don't hear people like, unless they're screaming at the top of their lung. Well, I had an incident once, I think, where somebody came up to my mom. They're like, we can't believe how much Ricky's changed. Like, he didn't even pay attention to us in batting practice. And I'm like, what? I was like, batting practice is packed and it's loud. And we were here in Anaheim and everyone, you just hear screams. You really don't hear your name unless it's your dad and the whistle or the certain saying he's got. Yeah. Kind of gets your attention right away. But if you're like yelling, Ricky, 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 it's just like, what do you do? And I think people sometimes get in their feelings about it. And it's not that I'm trying to be big league or anything like that, but it's just, I sometimes don't, you don't hear it when you're on the field as much.
Right. And well, they're yelling Ricky along with the other 30,000 people yelling Ricky, right?
Just like his kids are yelling right now. What's up, Sebastian?
Yeah. Jeez.
But it's, but it's true though. It's, I've had that issue in St. Louis. And I just tell my close friends, I say, hey, just use my nickname. Use a nickname. Because if somebody uses a nickname with me, I'll know where it's coming from. But if you just yell Josh, I don't. Not that anybody, everybody was really yelling for me, but sometimes.
But in St. Louis, they were, because you were close to home, right?
Yeah, right. I grew up 30 minutes from St. Louis. So that was, and with all the tickets, I mean, geez, the list goes on. It's fun to go play in your hometown, but it's stressful and a lot of work.
What was the nickname they had to yell at you?
Most of my friends just call me JT.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought it was gonna.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel Josh on the ticket stuff. My first start here in Anaheim was the same thing. It was like you're getting pulled left and right. Hey, can you leave tickets? Can you leave such and such tickets? And I had a bad start, and I remember after that bad start in Anaheim, I told my mom after, I was like, listen, when I come here, it's a business trip and we're come here to win ball games. And it's not for me to say hi to 30 million people that want to say hi to me after a game. I come to see you guys and spend time with you guys. It's nothing against anyone else, but I got a job to do when I come here. Right. So next time we came, I said, here you go. I'm leaving 20 tickets. You do whatever you want with them.
That's funny you did that. I did the same thing. I had that. That's where I drew the line because I was tired of getting the list of John needs 3 tickets, Tim needs 4 tickets. I told my mom, you get X amount of tickets and you divvy them up. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cool thing about those that too, Josh, and you know this. Usually you get 4 tickets at every city, every game. In order to get more tickets, other guys have to pass them on to you. So whoever's not using the tickets, you say, hey, can I get your tickets for today's game? Yada, yada, yada. So you go around. The cool thing about when I came to Anaheim, it's like the veteran guys knew me as a young guy. They knew, they're like, hey, man, we know this is your hometown. Here, I'll pass over my tickets. You have an extra four. So that's how they start adding up. And then next thing you know, you can say, hey, mom, here's 20 tickets. Do whatever you want with them.
Right. Go ahead, Ben.
No, go ahead, Tony. Go ahead.
No, I always went to – I got to the point I was tired of getting passwords and all of that. You go to the traveling secretary and you say, true. Hey, can you dump 20 tickets into my account? And most of them know, and they'll do that. And that's what, like, I've referenced Mike Shaw a handful of times, but that's what Mike was so good at was when we would go we'd go to St. Louis on an interleague play, and I didn't even have to ask Mike Shaw. The tickets were in my account. He just knew, and he just had awesome feel with that.
But people don't know that you also got to pay for those tickets. You got to pay taxes on that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's and then, okay, how many times would be like, oh, these are the tickets he left me up here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why are they so high? I had that at Yankee Stadium one time. Family section at Yankee Stadium is in the second deck. It's the closest you can get to the field. And I left two different groups of friends tickets. And the one group I didn't know that well, and I knew the other friend a lot better. And he had said that the guy was complaining about how high the seats were. I said, hell, next time you're going to go into the third deck out in the freaking left field. How about that?
Or buy your own. Or buy your own.
Yeah, get your damn own. Get off your wallet and sit by the dugout.
Yeah. Yeah, and the reason they don't give you, and the reason at Yankee Stadium they don't give you in the first deck is because why are they going to give them to you for free when they can sell them for like $500 and people are going to pay?
Well, we saw that the other day, right, Ricky, with the alumni, what each team does for the alumni, like certain teams, oh, you get four tickets no matter what. Yankees are like, oh, alumni, cool. Go to Ticketmaster and you can get some tickets here.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's the Yankee way, man. They just do things differently. And and they're the reason why they're it's the Yankees, you know.
It does, dude, if you're really a friend of yours, you're going to go and support the dude, man. That's what you, that's what I always tell people. Like, just go out there. It's like, okay, what's harder? Figuring out the ticket list for your home game or your wedding? Who's going to your wedding, right? It's the same thing. Like, trying to figure out, you can't please anybody.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough, but we do our best. And like I said, you know me, Beto, I would big leaguing them in a stadium. Yeah. I would never do that.
Well, but you know, you change, Ricky. You change, bro. You might as well have West LA on your shirt. You're not used to LA.
Hey, funny story though. When I signed my contract, who was there having drinks with me that night? This guy, Josh.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, your extension?
Remember in Anaheim?
Oh, me?
Yeah, you. Right.
I thought you meant to.
Not me.
Oh,
no,
wait.
Not Josh.
Oh, wait.
That's where you signed your deal?
In 2010, yeah. We already had met, and then he was cool as hell from the beginning. And I was like, at first, I was like, what's this media guy like want? Who is this guy, and what does he want?
I just wanted to interview.
And then he interviewed me, and then we just hit it off, and it was like, bam. Like, he was my boy. So when I signed my contract, I came to Anaheim and I was like, hey, man, come out and celebrate with me and let's have a few drinks. And he came out. That's where my trust for him grew. Cause I was like, just never know, like media and stuff or like, you know, what's being, not that we did anything crazy, but it was like, I thought it was cool. You know, we kind of just shared.
I didn't even know you had signed your contract. Like, I didn't know what was going on. So like, Josh, the story with him is, I also covered the Lakers, and then I saw Ricky. So what I would always do is anybody who came to LA, I had to do like a minute report on them. I could do whatever I want every single day for the radio. I had a 60-second report on ESPN Radio, and I would always try to find somebody who had an LA connection to do it. So you could be the bench guy. It doesn't matter. You could be the bullpen coach. It doesn't matter. I tried to get Rox Arroyo interview, but the Mets wouldn't let me because he was a local kid. And then Ricky, he's running sprints with the Kobe Bryant t-shirt on in Anaheim. And I was like, let me go down there and talk to this dude. And I got a couple minutes with him. It was cool, dude, story, back and forth. That was it. No big deal. Just trying to give some guy. And then, like I said, we hit it off. I did an off-season workout with him, trying to do everything else. And then in Anaheim, he's like, hey, we're going out tonight. I'm like, that's not my style to go out with players or anything like that. But by that time, I kind of already knew him enough. So I was like, all right, cool, I'll go out. And you said you signed your contract. I didn't even know you had a big contract. I just went out. Well, it was cool.
That day.
We hung out in Orange County. Like, it was just that day, huh? Wow. Yeah. Go figure. No wonder your agent was hanging out.
Hey, by the way, all that Kobe stuff. Golly, I wish I would have saved that. Dude, I used to customize. You know, Josh, I used to customize all my Kobe stuff because you used to be able to Nike ID it. Now you can, obviously. But I had so many shoes that I used to train in that I threw away because I used to just wear them out. And now I see those shoes on like on shoe websites, and I'm like, oh my god! Not that I was gonna resell them because they were used, but God, I wish I would have saved them. Anyways, that's a conversation for another day.
Another day. All right, we're gonna wrap it up pretty soon. I just wanted because Tolly's got to go see the Ghost in Scranton. I gotta go watch my kids' basketball game. Ricky's got kids running around the house, and we're also on baby watch in Southern California because Ricky's wife is ready to. Have a
any day.
Moment. So next week, Tony, it might be me, you, and Marty Brown doing the podcast. We don't even know. or the chimney. Or the ghost.
If the baby's here, we'll bring her along too. We'll set her up right here and just bam.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get to this. I really want to get into this. Opening day is always special no matter what. People get all involved with it and it's fun. I want to go back, not to your opening day major league one. I want to go opening day, your first minor league season.
Oh.
Where were you, Ricky and Tolly? I mean, it's one thing because you guys probably went from, Ricky, you were in college, and then all of a sudden you're in the minors. Like, okay, this is cool. Tolly, you signed out of high school where it's probably like 20 people at your games to all of a sudden you're in a crowd. So So think about this. Yeah. And as you guys think about your memories of your first opening day when you're that 18-year-old kid or that 21-year-old kid, you guys are racking your brains right now. I love that. Because I know you guys remember your big league opening days, but the one where you look around, you're like, damn, I'm actually wearing a professional uniform for the first time. What was that like?
Yeah, so I'll say this. My road was a little different, right? So I went to the Gulf Coast League my very first year in professional baseball. So I don't count that. That's a pretty much like glorified spring training. There's no fans there. You play at 10 o'clock in the morning. My first real opening day was in short season in Kingsport, Tennessee. What I remember about it, I mean, that just kind of chaps me right now that I don't remember it. I mean, that would have been my first opening day. We definitely said a prayer before the game as the stands. That's what they did out there.
Really?
Not the national anthem.
Really?
The local priest prayed. I mean, dude, this is going to drive me crazy.
All right. Ricky, yeah.
For me, it, similar to Josh, when I signed, I went straight to short season, so their season had already started. I was more focused on looking for Auburn University than I was.
Couldn't wait to get to that college town.
So that the season has started there already. Everyone knew each other, but the following year, I believe. I started off in Dunedin because I skipped low A, Lansing, Michigan. And Josh knows because he played in the Florida State League. Opening day there is probably a total of maybe 10 people. Wow. So there isn't very many fans that go to those games. And yeah, it was nothing exciting, nothing crazy. The following year, I went to New Hampshire, and that was a little bit more. You get more fans there and excitement. And I think I spent the next 2.5 years in New Hampshire. So I was part of two opening days there in small city and in with the Fisher Cats right there in New Hampshire and Manchester, Manch Vegas, we used to call it Manchester.
Manch Vegas.
And Josh played there too because he was in the same league. So the Binghamton Mets, we'd always play them. So I remember those. I don't remember like anything vividly because I feel like, yeah, it's not the big leagues.
Yeah,
so.
This reason I wanted to get into that because I wanted you guys to rack your brain about that to kind of just show the people, let them hear about the road of where you're at. Because as much as opening day is always cool, you got to go back to where you started. And totally, this is where I was going with this. Your team in your first year in Kingsport 2006, the Appalachian League,
yep.
Of all the guys on that roster, three of you made it to the major leagues.
Yep.
Like, that's how hard the odds of getting there. You, Daniel Murphy, and where's this guy? A pitcher that was on there, too.
Jose De La Torre.
Jose De La Torre. That's who it is. You three made it to the major leagues on a roster of over 40-something guys. And that's where I want to fast forward with you. Totally, your first big league, major league opening day.
Would have been 2011 with the Mets. Opening days in New York are, I mean, that's what you play for. One of my favorite opening days was when I was with the Blue Jays. We were at Yankee Stadium to open up. And just the feel of New York and all, the stadium filled to the brim and then the flyovers, the people parachuting in. That's one of my favorite parts of opening day is that kind of tradition of the pastime that I think is what opening day is about.
Yeah, man. Like that's Ricky, your major league opening day.
Oh man, Josh says New York is where it's at, but oh man, it's tough to compete against Toronto on opening day for me. And I was part of a few other opening days for other teams when we would go play against them. But Toronto is just on another level. I feel like it's a 24-hour party, literally. It's like people just start drinking early. Bars are packed. You can't walk anywhere without it being Blue Jay gear everywhere. It's pretty special. And I remember in 2009, I was staying at the hotel because I was a young rookie. I said they didn't have a place to live. I was still trying to figure that out because I made the team late. So I stayed at the hotel. So it was an easy walk from the hotel down to the stadium. And Roy Halladay was pitching that night against the Detroit Tigers. And I just remember the energy that when they announce your name, when you line up down the line and they say your name and the camera gets put on you for a slight 3-4 seconds and you wave to the crowd and how everyone just starts going crazy. That to me is what opening day is all about. And obviously you fast forward a couple years and then I'm the starting pitcher and that's even crazier. The adrenaline rush that you feel during that time. For me, I was more nervous playing catch or stretching, playing catch and then going into the bullpen than I was into the real game. Like it was crazy. Like my heart just, dude, when I walked out in 11, I walked out through the left field fence. I literally, all you could hear was people going, Ricky, Ricky, Ricky. The stadium was packed already, packed. And I was like, oh my God, like what is going on right now? And I started looking around and I was like, I got to take it all in because when I'm out on that mound, I just got to zone all this out. And I did. It fired me up. It was like the best stretch of my life. I was like, felt so loose. I'm warming up. The ball's just coming out of my hand nicely. And I get in that bullpen and my heart's just ready to jump out of my jersey. And then once I made that walk from the bullpen down to the dugout, it was like, okay, now it's time to zone it in and lock it in here. And when you let go of that first pitch and you realize I just threw the opening day pitch for the Toronto Blue Jays, it meant a lot. I mean, why? Because look at my shirt. I mean, this is where I came from. You know, it just meant so much.
Damn. I right there, that gave me chills right there. Totally the Ricky,
yeah. You nailed it. The passion of the fans. Now I'll say this: the one thing about Toronto, no doubt. I mean, it is buzz for the 5 days leading up to opening day. There, I mean, it is. It feels like a party nonstop there with all the fans. The thing about that, even no matter what the weather is, the dome in Toronto gave it a different feel for me, because I think when you think baseball, I think spring, I think weather changes. So even that it's cold and you're playing in New York in April, that it was refreshing. But Ricky, I had a similar thing in 2011 when I started opening day behind the plate. Was I thought to myself how crazy it is. Just think, I'm one of 30 guys in the world that is doing this today. That's it.
Damn.
Yeah. Like Who did you catch?
2011 would have been, I think, probably Johan.
That's dope.
Yeah. That's dope. It would have probably been Johan. So, I mean, we still had a little bit older starting rotation.
Yeah.
You 2011 – Josh Tolley, 24 years old in New York. And Ruben Polanco actually has a pretty good question about being a kid in the stands. And I'm going to play off of that. This will be the last question before we get going. You're a big leaguer. You're an opening day guy. Tolley, you grew up going to Cardinal games.
Right.
Ricky, you grew up going to Dodger games. And everybody in the stands as a kid is saying, hey, one day I'm going to play there. One day I'm going to be a big leaguer. They're going to do that. Did you ever have that moment of where you kind of looked up and said, damn, actually made it on opening day? Wait, did you look up and you're like, did you go back? Did you have like those Hollywood flashback memories of like being that
hell
little
yeah.
kid?
Yeah. Hell yeah. For me, it was like every day was I was on cloud nine every day. You know where it got me during batting practice when I'd be shagging? I wanted to shag every single ball. Especially on opening day, the first time there, I was running like crazy, throwing balls into the stands. Why? Because I was once that kid in the stands hoping for a ball to be thrown at me. And I love throwing balls into the stands. Sometimes I'd get in trouble for it. But I really didn't care. I'd be like, just take it out of my paycheck. I don't care. You know, it was one of those things where it just – every time I had the – when I wasn't starting and I had the pleasure of going out there and shagging in the big leagues, it was special for me. And there's a reason why that led on to other things where I became the Blue Jays' first pitch catch. I used to catch the first pitch for everyone that threw out the first pitch, whether it was a little kid, whether it was a celebrity, and there was a lot of celebrities, but there was also a lot of cool kids I met along the way, adults, whoever it was, my dad throwing it on Father's Day. It led on to those things, and I just, for me, I never took it for granted. Every time I'd walk into that clubhouse and see my jersey hanging with the big 2-4, it was, I'd look at it and I was like, man, I'm pumped that my dad's last name is on the back of my jersey, and I'm repping him, and I'm repping all of East Los Angeles every time I head out there. So that was a cool part for me.
Yeah, I could echo the same thing. I mean, every opening day, I mean, as you get going through the season, it doesn't really change. But opening day was the day where it's like, holy shit, I'm the guy. I'm doing this, and yeah. It's weird to think that it's over to a point. I caught a thing the other day. Devin Travis was on a podcast. And he said he has one regret in the game. He says that's not not really, you know, pinching himself every day going, wake up, like this is real. And I have most definitely in my career taken some times for granted when you're going through 162 and the travel and this and that. But it's easy to take for granted and feel that you belong and you're the guy and everything else. But when you really step back and look at the fans, and I was the same way, Ricky. That was me. I mean, I made signs. I was on TV. I was on TV as a kid because of a sign that I had. Like, that's just what we did.
What sign? Wait, you had a sign? Hold on, Ricky. You had a sign, Tolley? What did it say?
Yeah, it was the McGuire. It was the McGuire Sosa home run. Remember when that was the home run? 98. Going on? 98. We were in the right field bleachers. And I had a sign that said something like, "Hey, Big Mac, hit it here," and it had a target on it.
It was like Brandon Crawford, I think. He had a sign one day, yep. Or he stood by a sign, and then he kind of redid the whole picture because he was at Candlestick watching the Giants grow up. And then, I mean, how crazy is that? And that's a lot of us. That I mean, you talk to most big leaguers. I mean, probably 95-98% of big leaguers, they'll tell you that there were those kids sitting in those stands at one point looking up to those guys out on the field. And I think that's why I represented it so well, and I took it to heart when it came to that. I want to be a good role model, and I want to be known as, not Ricky Romero, the baseball player, more Ricky Romero, the great person that he was. So anything that involved kids and whether it was hospital visits and stuff like that, it always gave me the energy to realize the impact that I can make. And I think that's why it's special for me. I pinch myself every time I'd go to Yankee Stadium, every time I'd walk into Fenway, and I was like, wow, like I get to do this here. Like, yep. I mean, I grew up on Belvedere Park, Salazar Park, and Evergreen Park, playing there in high school. And now I'm like, this is the cream of the crop. It doesn't get any better than this. And I think that's why it's so special. And you're right, Josh. I mean, when you look back at it, you're like, we did it. And we're part of that. What is it? Like 19,000 players that have ever played in the big leagues. It's crazy, man. When you look at the whole world, I mean, it's a world sport. Everyone, I mean, that's the top. The big leagues, and when you think about the impact that we were able to have and what we accomplished, I sleep good at night. For a while I didn't because of the way my career ended, but now I'm like, look back at it and I'm like, man, this is dope. Like, I did it. Well, I lived it.
Yeah, that's what I always say, Ricky. People say, well, how hard is it that you're not playing? Like, watching opening day was a little strange to me at first. It just had a weird feel about it because I've never been watching opening day really from my couch. I've been playing, whether it be in the minor leagues or the big leagues. But you're right. I mean, there's nothing. I can honestly say everything's been left on the table, or everything's been left out on the field. I've left nothing to second guess or say, boy, I wish I did it different, or I wish I would have done this. Like,
This is where it hit me, guys. Last time when I heard somebody say, you take every big leaguer that's ever played in the big leagues, you can't even fill up half of Dodger Stadium. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. That's crazy.
That's crazy. That's when you put it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
and we'll leave it right there. Man, good stories again. Man, the podcast continues to evolve every single week. And now we're getting people asking if they can come on. But no, I'm going to say no to everybody because I just want to hear more Tolly stories about being in right field with Big Mac and hit it here, Big Mac. I love that. And Tolly, yeah. You're right. This is the first time you've never been in a uniform for opening day.
Right.
And
yeah. That's why I try to keep myself busy, truly. Yeah. I mean, I run around. I hustle. I run around like a chicken with my head cut off.
I was like that too, Josh. I was like that too the first couple years that I stopped playing. Now I'm like, I take it all in, and I feel like it's cool, like watching it on TV. But I exactly know how you feel. It's almost like you want to watch, but you don't want to watch. You're like whatever, and then you catch yourself like kind of there's a like right now Jay Happ's on the mound, you know, and you're like whoa, like I used to catch that guy, you know, or I used to play catch with him in Toronto.
Right. And that's the thing, Ricky. One more thing, because I catch myself. I say, oh, that's okay. I'll catch some highlights later. But then I walk downstairs. I flip the TV on. Now, all of a sudden, I have three games on at 7 o'clock, and I'm going in between games. I'm calling the game in my head. It's like, I do really miss it. I truly miss it. But yeah. You know, that's it is what it is. I'm a baseball rat. That's what I love to do.
It's honestly cool. The times I've gotten to watch games with like our group chat, Beto, Ace, Marco, those guys, when they come to the house and I sit there and explain to them what's going on or what I'm, because they're so interested in it, and I explain, they're like, "Whoa, I never thought that was actually going on during the game, or I didn't know this was going on." And you get to kind of see it, and you, from our eyes, you see it completely different.
Yeah,
you know, we're not going to sit there and bash a guy for missing a pitch or say like, "Oh, he's an idiot. He should have hit that ball out." When it's like, man, like, you know how hard that is. You know, sometimes this happens. There's outs. There's bad outings. There's whatever. There's good outings, but it's cool when you get to open up a different side for the crowd that's used to watching it on TV.
And that's what we're doing here on the podcast. It's the stories that we're telling, and it continues to evolve. We're here every single Tuesday, live at 10 o'clock Pacific. We have people in Panama watching us. I know they're going to catch up to us in Manitoba, Vancouver. I'm going to start sending you the analytics, totally. You're going to start tripping out on like where people actually
Binghamton. Listen. Maybe the ghosts in Scranton are listening to
us
today.
See, we were doing so good, Ricky. We were doing so good. Now you got totally thinking
Josh
about
right
it.
We're like, gosh.
Well, you guys are getting regardless, you're getting a picture today.
All right.
No, we're 100%. Not. You're gonna take the picture today, and you're going to text it to us on Friday. That's what's going to happen.
I'm in Scranton. I have good service.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. I know everybody's going to go. We'll see you next week. Go to the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram page. Tolly, we'll talk to you soon. Good luck in Scranton. Say hello to Michael Scott. Ricky, get your workout in. Hopefully the baby doesn't come this week because we got golf later on. We got a big golf on Monday. And then...
Yeah, don't let the baby get in the way of the golf.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you understand us, Tolly. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Make sure you rate, review. Bye.